بعث الأنبياء والمرسلين، ثم الصلاة والسلام على خير خلق الله، العبد المؤيد والرسول المسدد، حبيب إله العالمين أبي القاسم محمد. وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين وصحابته المنتجبين. صلى الله عليك يا أبا عبد الله، صلى الله عليك يا سيدي ويا مولاي يا ابن رسول الله، يا رحمة الله الواسعة، ويا باب نجاة الأمة، ويا عبرة كل مؤمن ومؤمنة، يا ليتنا كنا معكم سادتي فنفوز فوزا عظيما. إذا شئت النجاة فزر حسينا لكي تلقى الإله قرير عيني، فإن النار ليس تمس جسما عليه غبار زوار الحسين. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم، بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. إن الله لا يغير ما بقوم حتى يغيروا ما بأنفسهم. عطروا أفواهكم بذكر الصلاة على محمد وآل محمد. A second for the love of Imam al-Hasan and Imam al-Hussein. It's the night of Ashura. A third for the love of Fatima al-Zahra with your loudest voices. Last year, on the eve of Ashura, on the night of Ashura, we discussed a subject under the title, What is Wrong with Muslims Today? Last year, we discussed this concept and this idea that Muslims today are extremely behind. And everyone knows this. It doesn't take a genius to figure it out. That Muslims are completely backward and behind today. Politically, Islamic nations are the most unstable nations. Militarily, they have the weakest armies. Economically, Islamic nations suffer from the worst economies. Poverty lines in Islamic countries are extremely high. Educationally, Muslims' illiteracy rates in Muslim countries are the highest than other countries. Last year, we gave three possible explanations. We said the first possible explanation for this backwardness, for Muslims being behind, is Islam itself. And this is the opinion of Orientalists. Orientalists like Bernard Lewis, Samuel Huntington, and others believe that Islam is the factor behind the backwardness of Muslims. If Muslims were to abandon Islam, they would be fine. The second explanation was Western imperialism. Western imperialism has caused the backwardness of Muslims. They have caused Muslims to go back. And the third explanation was that Muslims have abandoned Islam. Islam is the reason, but not because Muslims adhere to Islam, but it's because they are not practicing Islam. Because they are not implementing Islamic teachings, this is why they're behind. This is why they're backward. Last year, we discussed the problem. When you go to a doctor, a doctor performs two tasks. The doctor, number one, he diagnoses the problem. He diagnoses the illness. He tells you what's wrong with you. This is one. Number two, he gives you a cure. Not only does he diagnose the problem, but he gives you, he provides you with a cure. Last year, we attempted to diagnose the problem. Tonight, we'd like to provide some cures. And of course, there's two types of cures. You go to a doctor, if you have chest pain, the doctor will give you two types of cures. There's a temporary cure and there's a permanent cure. Which one do you want? If you want a temporary cure, the doctor will tell you take aspirin. The chest pain will go away. Abstain from oily food and you'll be fine. But this cure is what? It's temporary. It's actually increasing the problem. Why? Because at the end of the day, you're going to have to resolve to the permanent cure, not the temporary cure. The temporary cure doesn't do anything. The permanent cure, the doctor will tell you, you need an angiogram. You need a bypass surgery. You have two or three closed arteries, and we're going to have to remove them. This is a permanent cure. Tonight, we'd like to provide a permanent cure, not a temporary cure. We don't need temporary cures. We need a permanent solution to the backwardness of the Muslims. Sallallahu ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. The solution, my dear friends, the solution is very simple. The solution to our problems today, which is holding us back, we Muslims, while every other community is going straight forward and advancing and becoming more successful, why are we remaining idle, if not going back, is one issue. We need to change our perspectives. We need to change our way of thought, our thinking. In other words, we need to change our strategies. There's something wrong with our strategies. When the U.S. was failing in Afghanistan, they realized there's something wrong with what? The strategy. They had to change their entire strategy. Otherwise, they'll continue failing. We Muslims need to change our strategies and choose a new strategy. What are those strategies that we need to change, and what's the strategy that we need to choose? Salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. Number one, some Muslims have the surrender strategy. What's the surrender strategy? Some Muslims believe in surrendering in the face of backwardness, in the face of this bitter reality. Some Muslims believe that we need to surrender. There's nothing we can do about this reality. We have to accept it. We Muslims are behind, and we will remain behind. And there is absolutely nothing for us to do about it. That's it. We need to surrender. This is called the surrender strategy. Some Muslims have surrendered. They've surrendered a long time ago. Today they're surrendering. Some even have the audacity to bring Allah into this. and say that Allah has chosen for us to be behind. Allah has chosen for us to be backward. And if Allah chooses for you something, you have to what? You have to accept it. You have to believe in it. You have to surrender to it. No, and you have to be grateful for it as well. They say this is qada and qadr. We have been predestined to be behind. We have been predestined to live in poverty lines, to live in weak countries, to live with weak economies, with a poor political system. Allah destined this for us. And we need to accept it. And some say, don't even try to do anything about it because you'll fail. Don't try to establish a government that follows the school of Tarb Ahl Bayt in Iraq because you'll fail. Because it's not destined for you to have a government headed by the school of Tarb Ahl Bayt in Iraq. You have to surrender. This is Allah's destiny. Allah destined for us to be killed, to be massacred, to have mass graveyards, to be manipulated, to be deceived. Allah decided all this for us. And we need to accept this. There's something wrong with this strategy. There's something wrong with the core of this strategy. What's wrong with the strategy? If it doesn't follow the Quran. It contradicts the Quran. Because Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says in the Quran, وَمَا اللَّهُ يُرِيدُ ظُلْمًا بِالْعِبَادِ. Allah does not perform injustice. Allah is not an oppressor. Allah is not unjust. Allah is just. Allah is fair. How can we say that Allah destined for us to have mass graveyards, to be killed, to be manipulated, and to be deceived? This contradicts the Quran. Allah says, وَمَا أَصَابَتْكُم مِّن مُصِيبَةٍ فَبِمَا كَسَبَتْ أَيْدِيكُمْ. The problems that you face, it's because of you, it's not because of me. Because you performed something wrong. There's something wrong in your equation. I didn't do anything. Allah says it's your responsibility, not my responsibility. It's your fault, not my fault. Thus, it's silly to say that we're predestined to live in backwardness. We're predestined to be behind. This is silly. This contradicts the Quran. Furthermore, who said that we're predestined? First of all, we don't believe in predestination. We don't believe in jabr. We believe that we have what? A free will. We human beings, Allah gave us a free will. All you brothers and sisters that came tonight, did someone force you? Did you see yourselves being forced to ride in your cars or ride in the bus and come? No one forced you. You came with your own will. We have a human will. We have a free will. We don't believe in predestination. We don't believe in jabr. The Asha'ara believe in jabr. We don't. Who said that we are predestined to live this life? This sort of life. Living in backwardness and being behind. Weren't the early Muslims successful? When we read history, we see that the early centuries in Islamic history, Muslims were extremely successful. All the scientific discoveries were performed by Muslim scholars. All the achievements were performed by Muslim scholars. The Islamic civilization was the most advanced civilization. How come it wasn't? How come they weren't destined to be behind and be backward? What happened? In fact, some historians say that the Shia, the followers of Ahl Bayt, throughout history, they've had over 100 governments. Over 100 governments. Al-Buwayhiyun, Al-Hamdaniyun, Al-Safawiyun, Al-Buwayhiyun, and so on and so forth. We've had over 100 governments. Who said we've been predestined to live a backward life, to be behind? We're not predestined. The problem is with us. Let's not blame it on Allah. If the Jews of Germany and Europe, after the Holocaust, if they had said, you know what, this is our fate. This is our destiny. Our destiny is to be killed. Our fate was to have 6 million Jews be burned at the Holocaust. This is our fate. This is our destiny. To live in. To be behind. To to live with mass murders and mass killings and massacres. But they didn't. The Jews of Europe did not surrender to this fate. They could have surrendered and said, you know what, this is our fate. But they didn't. In fact, they had the will to build a nation where? To build a nation in the heartland of the Arab world. And with the support of whom? With the support of the United States of America and European nations. They say, wherever there's a will, there's a way. They came and built a nation over our lands. They didn't surrender to their fate. This is one of the problems, my dear friends. This strategy needs to be changed. The surrendering strategy. This needs to be changed. Number two. Salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. There's another strategy that has caused us to be behind and backward, and it's called the finger-pointing strategy. What does this strategy mean? The finger-pointing strategy is a strategy of saying that person is responsible. This group is responsible for bringing us behind. That group is responsible for making us backward. This group, that group, but never us. Never us. This is called the finger-pointing strategy. It's called the blame game. Just blame others. Blame others. Say that they are responsible, but we're never responsible. And indeed, this is how it is. This is how our community works. When you ask the scholars, who do you think is responsible for our backwardness? They say the government. The government is responsible. The government needs to do more. When you ask the government, who do you think is responsible? They say, we believe the citizens are responsible. When you ask the citizens, who do you think is responsible? They say the scholars are responsible. Each group pointing the finger at someone else. No one saying that I'm responsible. I or we're responsible. It's our fault. My fault. No, it's always him, her, they, them. Never us. This is a problem. When we don't acknowledge responsibility, when we don't accept responsibility, this is what happens. We're always blaming others. Read the newspapers. Look at TV stations. Just look at our regular chats, regular conversations. We're always blaming others. Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi, when he sent the first khalifa to Khaybar, when he came back with his group, we mentioned this yesterday, what happened? يُجَبِّنُ أَصْحَابَهُ وَيُجَبِّنُ. He's saying they're cowards and they're saying he's a coward. No one said we're cowards. We're not the right people for the job. Imam Ali is the right person for the job. No. He's a coward or they're a coward. It's never us. It's never we. It's never I. This is a problem. And it's time that we take responsibility. We don't throw the responsibility on others. There's some people that only know how to talk. Just talk. Big speeches. But when it comes time to work, there's no work. There's no action. We're fed up with lectures. And we're fed up with speeches. We want action. We want action. They say that a man went into those parlors to get a tattoo. Huge gentleman, huge muscles. He went in and he said, I want a tattoo. They said, what kind of tattoo? He said, me? A person like me? I want a lion. A tattoo of a lion on my back. They said, okay, sit down. As soon as he sat, once he felt the pinching, he said, wait, hold on a second. What are you working on? He said, the tail. He said, wow, this really hurts. As he kept on going, he kept on feeling the pain. He said, you know what? I changed my mind. I want a cat. Some of us, we only know how to talk about lions. But when it's time to work, we work like kittens. We work like cats. Islam says, be responsible. Don't put the responsibility on others. كلكم راع وكلكم مسؤول عن رعيته. You are all responsible. You're all responsible. Each and every single one of us is responsible. Thus, this strategy needs to change. the finger-pointing strategy, the blame game needs to change. Number three, the third strategy. And this is very common. There's one strategy among us and our communities called the conspiracy trend, the conspiracy strategy. Every single massacre, every single tragedy that happens amongst us, we say this is a conspiracy. Watch out. Watch out. The CIA is behind this. The MI6 is behind this. The Mossad is behind this. Every single problem in our community, we blame it on a conspiracy. How many people are like this in our community? A lot. A lot. Everything is a conspiracy. Whenever there's a civil war, whenever there's a problem, whenever two people kill each other, there's a conspiracy. There's an old saying in India that if two whales fought in the ocean, blame it on the British government. And there's a saying amongst us, our community, that if two couples fought, if a husband and wife fought, blame it on Israel. This is a joke. Blame everything on conspiracies. Everything is a conspiracy. Whatever happens in our governments, in our societies, in our communities is a conspiracy. This is a joke. Of course, we cannot deny that there are some groups that are after us. There are some groups that want us to fail. There are some groups that set traps for us. But not with every single problem. Not with every single problem. Not everything is a conspiracy. We can't blame everything on conspiracies. Why is our economy terrible? Because there's an Israeli conspiracy. Why our lands are occupied? There's a conspiracy. There's a Western conspiracy. Then what about us? Are we infallible? We're perfect, but there's a conspiracy making us fail. Otherwise, we'd be perfect. This is a joke. We're not perfect. Let's take responsibility. Let's sometimes say that the problem is within us. Our society, our government, our communities. Let's not always blame outside agents. And this problem, my dear friends, has always existed throughout history. Even within Islamic history, we see that people always spoke of conspiracies. How many of you have heard of an individual called Abdullah ibn Sabah? Abdullah ibn Sabah. Abdullah ibn Sabah is a mythic figure that some groups like the Salafis and Wahhabis always talk about. Abdullah ibn Sabah. Supposedly, Abdullah ibn Sabah was a Jew who converted into Islam and who wishes to bring Jewish teachings into Islam. Whenever you hear of these Salafi and Wahhabi speakers, they always say, these are the conspiracies of Abdullah ibn Sabah. Who was Abdullah ibn Sabah? Some historians say that Abdullah ibn Sabah did not even exist. He didn't even exist. But they always blame Abdullah ibn Sabah. Thus, our communities were brought up knowing nothing but conspiracies. Talking about conspiracies. All of our problems today go back to conspiracies. This needs to change, my friends. This is the year 2009. Tomorrow it's going to be 2010 and we're still talking about conspiracies? Old conspiracies? This is a joke. People are laughing at us. People are laughing at how silly we are. At how gullible we are. How naive we are to talk about conspiracies all the time. Again, I'm not saying that no one's out there to set traps for us. No, we have enemies. But it's not all about enemies. Saddam Hussein, every day he would stand, the enemy wants to do this. The enemy wants to do that. The enemy is preparing an attack. The enemy is doing... This was a joke. This strategy needs to change. Salla ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. The fourth strategy that we need to change, our friends, is the cynic strategy. What's the cynic strategy? We have some community members that God has blessed them and would like to achieve. They would like to contribute. We have some members of our large community. When I say large community, I don't mean specifically London or Europe or America. But no, our Muslim community at large. We have some members that would like to contribute. We have some members in our community that are politically active, socially active, religiously active, and God bless them. They are working, they are trying to achieve. Their mission, their goal is to bring success to Muslim communities, is to enhance the overall Muslim situation. But these people are taken for granted. You have some people that do not recognize them, that do not support them, that do not thank them, that do not recognize them. Why? When you see a person who's trying to achieve, when you see a person who's trying to bring success to your community, why don't you recognize him? Why don't you thank him? Why don't you show words of appreciation? Unfortunately, in our communities, we have a group of cynics. They just sit, and all they do is criticize. Look at this group, they're going to fail. Look at that person trying to work, he's going to fail. Look at that person, he has personal motives. All we do is criticize. Instead of recognizing, instead of encouraging, instead of thanking, instead of extending a hand of help, all we do is sit and criticize. We're cynics. We sit and we wait for the other group to fail. This foundation started a program, they're going to fail. Just watch, they're going to fail. Why? Why do we have that sense of cynicism? We have some members in our community, they're like wolves. They're waiting for the failure of others. They say that a sheep was about to die. A wolf came and sat in front of the sheep, waiting for it to die so that he could come and attack. The sheep looked at the wolf. It was a Monday. The sheep told the wolf that the doctor said, I'm not going to die till Wednesday. The wolf said, don't worry, I don't have anything to do till Friday. We have some members in our community, they're waiting for us to fail. Whoever wants to work, they wait for him to fail. They expect him to fail, like wolves. Unfortunately, our communities are not united. We don't work together. Instead of encouraging one another, we work against each other. In 1948, there was a war between Israel and the Arab countries. Israel had one army, the Arabs had seven armies. Who lost in that battle? The Arabs. Why? For this same exact reason. Israel had one army, the Arabs had seven armies. This is the reason why they failed. They didn't have one army. If they had one army, they would have won. But because their armies were divided, they lost the battle. Even though they outnumbered the Israelis. There were more, their numbers were more, but they lost. Why? Because they didn't work together. And today we face the same exact problem. We're still divided. We're waiting for each other to lose. We're waiting for each other to fail. Instead of helping one another, no, we're cynics. Look at the media today. Read the Arab media. The Arab media today is concentrating on a specific country. I will not mention names. On a specific country, encouraging revolution in that country. Whenever there's a small riot, they make it into a major deal, a big deal. Why? Because they want a revolution in that country. They're expecting them to fail. They wish that that government would be toppled. Is this what Islam teaches us? Is this what Islam taught us? That expect failure to your friends, to your brothers and sisters? Wish them evil? Is this what Islam taught us? And believe me, the only reason why they're doing this is because the other side is followers of Ahlul Bayt. Because they're followers of Ahlul Bayt. If they followed someone else, they would not be so cynical. They would not be so critical. But because they're followers of Ahlul Bayt, this is the only reason. They expect them to fail. They wish that a revolution would occur. Why? This strategy must change, my dear friends. And the fifth strategy. And the fifth strategy that needs to be changed is the denial strategy. What's the denial strategy? What does it mean? Salla ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. Some people live in denial. They know that Muslims are behind. They know that we're behind and we're backward, but they live in denial. They pretend that we're not. They pretend that we're fine, we're successful, we're okay. They live in denial. One day, a poetry teacher, told his students to stand and recite poetry that they wrote. One of the students, one of the small children, he stood up and he recited a beautiful poem. The teacher noticed that this is not his poem. This is the poem of Al-Mutanabbi, a very famous poet that lived centuries ago. He told him, "Where'd you get this poem from?" He said, "I wrote it." He said, "No, you didn't. This is Al-Mutanabbi's poem." He said, "No, this is my poem." He said, "No, Al-Mutanabbi wrote this poem many years ago when you didn't even exist. You weren't even there." He said, "Exactly. Because I wasn't there, Al-Mutanabbi stole it from me." Denial. We Muslims, we live in denial. We know that we're backward. We know that we're behind, yet we deny it. So what do? We engage in other trivial matters that make us forget the reality. That let us forget what's important. The important matters. We busy ourselves with something else. At the end of the Abbasi dynasty, at the time of Al-Mutawakkil, a major problem rose in the Muslim Ummah. It was called Al-Mihna. A major problem, they called it the problem, Al-Mihna. What was this problem? There became a debate among the scholars, that is the Qur'an created or not created? Silly question, isn't it? Some said the Qur'an is created because only Allah is not created. Only Allah is old, qadim. Everything else is hadith, new and created, including the Qur'an. Another group said, no, the Qur'an is the word of Allah. Since Allah is qadim, He's not created, His words are also not created, they are also qadim. Because of this debate, this silly debate over the Qur'an, whether it's qadim or hadith, a major problem rose among the Islamic nation. In fact, there was bloodshed. There was war. There was killing. There was imprisonment. There was persecution over this silly issue. So many people were killed and massacred because of this issue. Mas'alat al-Qur'an. Khalq al-Qur'an. Except the Ahlul Bayt. The Ahlul Bayt refused to get into this argument. The Ahlul Bayt, they realized that this was a fitna. This was a problem. This was an obstacle created to distract Muslims from their real mission. From their important mission. In fact, up till that date, the Muslims were extremely successful. They had achievements. They had a lot of academic achievements, a lot of academic work. Up till this problem, up till the time that this obstacle rose, Muslims started going backward. Why? Because they became busy with trivial matters. When Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam was asked, "What's your opinion? Is the Qur'an qadim or hadith? Is the Qur'an created or not created?" He says, "Amma ba'd." He wrote a letter. "Amma ba'd, fa'inna al-hadith hawla al-Qur'an. Hal huwa qadim am hadith? Fahuwa fitna." This is a problem. And we will not get into this problem. The Ahlul Bayt refused. And they did not answer. They were several times they were asked, "What is your opinion?" They said, "We refuse to answer because this is a trivial issue. This is something that is used to distract you from your real mission. Instead of going straight forward, you're going behind." Indeed, we Muslims, what we do is that we engage in useless, non-important matters and we forget our real objective to go straight, to move forward, to succeed and advance. That is why Amir al-Mu'mineen, salamullah alayhi, he says, لا قربة بالنوافل إذا أضرت بالفرائض. You cannot seek nearness to Allah with something recommended at the cost of something mandatory. You cannot. I'll give you an example. You spend the entire night reciting Salat al-Layl. But an hour before Salatul Subh, you fall asleep and you don't wake up for Salatul Subh. Will the Salatul Layl, will you be rewarded for Salatul Layl? You perform Salatul Layl at the cost, Salatul Layl, which is something recommended, you performed it at the cost of something mandatory, which is Salatul Subh. And you cannot seek nearness to Allah with something recommended at the cost of something mandatory. Amir al-Mu'mineen says, "Man ishtaghala bil muhim, dhayya' al-ahm." He who engages in something important, he will lose that which is something more important. And this is what we're doing. We Muslims, we've become experts in abandoning that which is more important and engaging in something which is regularly important. And this has brought us destruction. When the Muslim army wanted to invade Constantinople, which is today where? In Turkey, Istanbul. One of the soldiers said, "Hold on a second, let me jump over the walls of Constantinople and see what's happening there." He jumped over the walls and he saw a preacher, a priest, they were Christians. He saw a preacher, a priest, giving a lecture about the body of Jesus. The body of Jesus that was crucified. Was it his physical body or was it his spiritual body? The man immediately jumped back to his army laughing. He said, "This battle is going to be a piece of cake." Piece of cake. Why? Because they're busy. They're not ready. They don't have their weapons. They're not ready to fight us. They're too busy discussing the body of Jesus Christ. And indeed, the Muslims crossed the walls, they invaded, and they won the battle. When you busy yourself with something not important, you're going to lose. A man came to Imam al-Kadhim alayhi salam and he told him, "Ya ibn Rasulullah, ash-shirku aqdam am al-kufr?" Which one is older, paganism or disbelief? The Imam says, "Wama anta wadhak?" This is none of your business. What sort of question is this? Some people, honestly, they come and ask stupid questions. They say there's no such thing as stupid questions. No, I believe there is such thing as a stupid question. Why, when there's more important issues, don't busy yourself with something not important? Some people, they come and ask me. And I know some youth, they don't even pray. He doesn't pray, he doesn't fast. He comes and asks me a ridiculous question about the history of Rasulullah. And my answer is, "Do you pray? Do you you want to know this information? I'll tell you. But first, do you have your priorities straight or no?" Sometimes we don't have our priorities straight. This is the problem. This is called a denial strategy. We forget about our priorities. I remember 2 years, 3 years ago in the United States of America, there was a masjid in the state of Michigan, a Yemenese masjid. And it was all over the news. This masjid wanted to put microphones outside, speakers, I'm sorry. They wanted to put speakers outside their masjid so that the adhan would be heard everywhere. So that when five times a day, the muadhin comes and he shouts from the top of his lungs, the entire neighborhood, even the Christians and Jews and Buddhists, will wake up for Salatul Subh. The city did not allow them. And they went to court. They went to court pressing on this right. We have the right to have our speakers outside. This is ridiculous. Does this mean that we Muslims in America, the only issue remaining for us to be successful is to have our adhan be heard outside? Isn't this ridiculous? Five times a day, a muadhin comes and shouts and wakes the entire neighborhood? This is ridiculous. This is why some communities are not developing. This is why some communities are remaining behind, because we don't get our priorities straight. I will ask the brothers and sisters to please stand. The brothers pull forward. The sisters, I don't know, you want to push back, come forward, it's up to you. رحم الله من ذكر القائمة من آل محمد. Please stand, brothers. Please stand and come forward. Pull forward, please. Come forward, please. Come forward, make room. صلوا على محمد وآل محمد. A second salawat, please. We also have created obstacles for ourselves. We also, some of us, engage in trivial matters instead of getting our priorities straight. Instead of concentrating on which is important, we go on other issues. How many times have we heard in our communities, how many times have people come and ask this question, and it's a silly question. Is the urine of Rasulullah and the Ahlul Bayt, is it pure or najis? Did you know that because of this question, people fought? People physically fought. Those who said it was najis were physically fought over this silly question. As if we come to the end, whether we say it's najis or we say it's pure, how will it help us develop? How will it help us come out of this problem, come out of being backward and improving, becoming successful? How? In some communities, they worry about this question, that on the day of Ashura, did Imam Hussein alayhi salam fight to the finish, or did he surrender and let them kill him? Because if you say that he fought till the finish and he was exhausted, this is kufr. You cannot say this. Because he's an imam. And he could wipe out the entire world if he wanted to. So you can't say that he fought to the finish. He surrendered. And I know in some communities they fought over this issue. They fought. Isn't this silly? Is this what Islam asks of us? To worry about this issue? And every year, there's the issue of tatbir. The issue of hitting the heads with our swords. Hitting heads with swords. Some people make it haram. They stand and give lectures, and whoever does it is so-and-so. And those that make it wajib and say whoever doesn't do it is so-and-so. Islam is reduced to tatbir. We reduced Islam and Imam Hussein to tatbir, whether it's haram or wajib. This is ridiculous. This is ridiculous. Every year it's the same issue, dividing us. Instead of dwelling on the important issues, we waste our time on these issues. This is very sad. This is called the denial strategy. Instead, my dear friends, we need one strategy. We don't need the surrender strategy. Nor what? The finger pointing strategy. And by the way, I forgot to mention, when you point your finger at someone, when you say it's his fault, there's an old saying that says when you point one finger, remember that there's three fingers pointing back at you. There's three fingers pointing back at you. Remember the next time you want to point. We don't need the finger pointing strategy. We don't need the cynicism strategy. Nor the conspiracy strategy, nor the denial strategy. We need one strategy and that's it. The responsibility strategy. The be responsible strategy. This is what we need. Let's be more responsible. Let's all of us think about the Muslim world. Where we are today, where we were, and where we could be. Most of your youth, and you're bright, you're intelligent, you're either in high school or you're in college, you're in good colleges, I pray, you're in good universities, and if you're not, aim to go to excellent universities. You're excellent youth, and you're intelligent. You can think of the solutions to fix our problems today. Enough beating around the bush. Enough wasting time. Let's think of the solutions. وَقِفُوهُمْ إِنَّهُمْ مَسْئُولُونَ Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, we will all be held responsible. Why are we backward? Why are we behind? Why is every other community going ahead and we're walking backwards? Why? We'll be asked. وَقِفُوهُمْ إِنَّهُمْ مَسْئُولُونَ كلكم راع وكلكم مسؤول عن رعيته. We are all responsible, whether you're a scholar or a regular citizen or a politician or a doctor or an engineer, whether you're a man or a woman, whether you're an elderly or a youth, we're all responsible. we will be held responsible. Let's do something about it. I'd like to share something with you. Yesterday, one of the things that I talked about the hadith of Ahlul Bayt, and that we need to pay more attention regarding the hadith of Ahlul Bayt. And I mentioned one thing. I mentioned the book Al-Bihar Al-Anwar, this huge encyclopedia, an Islamic encyclopedia. I mentioned that this is a very voluminous book, a very huge book, but unfortunately it has not been translated into English. If it were to be translated into English, this would be a huge milestone. Someone, I don't know who, but I think it's one of the sisters, sent me a letter right before I came up, saying that she has started a group, she has started, or she wants to start a foundation to translate the book Bihar al-Anwar into English. And this is wonderful. This is wonderful. If there was one fruit to these lecture series, it's this. This sense of responsibility. This sense of action. This sense of wanting to do something. I don't know if it's one of the brothers. I'm assuming it's one of the sisters. But this is excellent. This is the sense of responsibility. This is the sense of accomplishment. This is what will improve us, my dear friends. Now, the sister and her friends and whoever helps her, they might succeed and they might not succeed. But at least there is a will. At least there is a will to succeed. At least they want to succeed. At least they want to achieve. I have a friend from this community. He came to me and he said, "Sayyid, I believe that we, the Muslim community here in this country and in every other community, we need to have political engagement. We need to encourage our youth to get involved in politics, to be more politically aware." And I might have mentioned this before, that in our communities, in our Muslim communities, most parents, they encourage our children to have three occupations and that's it. The idea of success is reduced in three occupations. Being an engineer, a doctor, and a lawyer. That's it. Why? You're not successful if you become a scholar, a religious scholar. You won't be considered successful if you become a politician. It's the sense of responsibility, of wanting to achieve, of wanting to help. Like this brother here that's been helping me with this microphone that's giving me a headache. Salla ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. I appreciate it. Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam says, "Man ra'a minkum munkaran falyughayyirhu biyadihi. Fa in lam yastata' fa bi lisanihi. Fa in lam yastata' fa bi qalbihi wa dhalika adhaful iman." Ahsant. If you see something wrong, do something about it. Don't remain silent. Don't nag about it. We're experts in nagging. We can sit and nag from morning till night, from night till morning. But nagging is not enough. Do something about it. Rasulullah says, if you see something, do something about it. If not with your hands, with your tongue. If you're not with your tongue, at least with your heart. وَذَلِكَ أَضْعَفُ الْإِيمَانِ. That's the least thing you could do. Let's do something about it. Let's feel responsible. And believe me, my friends, our communities will not change unless the youth will start. The change will come from the youth, not from the elderly. I don't expect the elderly to do anything about it, the older generation, but I expect the youth. We have a lot of hope in the youth because you're ambitious and you're intelligent and you have hope for the future. Our hope is with you. Change will come from with you. إِنَّ اللَّهَ لَا يُغَيِّرُ مَا بِقَوْمٍ حَتَّى يُغَيِّرُوا ما بأنفسهم. Imam Hussein alayhi salam taught us to be responsible. Imam Hussein taught us the meaning of responsibility. Because he was the first person to be responsible. He says, قَالَ جَدِّي رَسُولَ اللَّهِ مَنْ رَأَى مِنْكُمْ سُلْطَانًا جَائِرًا نَاكِثًا لِعَهْدِ اللَّهِ مُخَالِفًا لِسُنَّةِ رَسُولِ اللَّهِ يعمل في عباد الله بالإثم والعدوان ولم يغير عليه لا بقول ولا بفعل كان حقا على الله أن يدخله مدخله. Imam Hussein felt responsible. Some think that Imam Hussein was the only person living in Medina. No, there were other Sahaba. And there were the children of the Sahaba and the grandchildren of the Sahaba. Yet no one of them felt the responsibility of standing against Yazid except Imam Hussein. The others were there. There were lots of grand Sahaba, prominent scholars in Medina. Yet only Imam Hussein felt responsible. That is why when he stands, he says, وَإِنِّي لَمْ أَخْرُجْ أَشْرًا وَلَا بَطَرًا وَلَا مُفْسِدًا وَلَا ظَالِمًا. I did not rise for wealth, nor fame, nor power, for nothing except one reason. وَإِنَّمَا خَرَجْتْ لِطَلَبِ الْإِصْلَاحِ فِي أُمَّةِ جَدِّي. I rose for reform. I'm a reformist. What got Imam Hussein to become a reformist? His sense of responsibility. Imam Hussein felt there is a need for change, so he changed. Today we feel a need for change, we must change. This should be what we take home with us from the day of Ashura. This should be the lesson of these lecture series. A need for change. We all need to be catalysts for change. أريد أن آمر بالمعروف وأنهي عن المنكر. Imam Hussein felt the need to change. He had to order the good and forbid the evil. He had to. Imam Hussein alayhi salam saw a person like Yazid who claimed to be Khalifatu Rasulullah. Khalifatu Rasulullah. The representative of Allah. But what a drastic difference. Rasulullah lived the life of poverty. Lived a simple life. Rasulullah, for days he would go on without food. One day he comes to the house of Fatima al-Zahra and he says, Ya Fatima, do you have any food? She said, yes. She feeds him. Once he eats, he says, يَعْلَمُ اللَّهِ أَنَّ هَذَا أَوَّلُ طَعَامٍ يَدْخُلْ جَوْفَ أَبِيكِ مُنْذُ ثَلَاثٍ. This is the first piece of food that enters your father for the past 3 days. This is how Rasulullah was. He lived a life of poverty. But yet comes a person like Yazid who declares himself as a king. A king. And he's a representative of Rasulullah. You think Imam Hussein could stay silent? Absolutely not. That is why Imam Hussein stands and he fights. This is the eve of Ashura, my dear friends. This is one of the greatest nights in history. One of the greatest nights in history was the night of Ashura, because history was made on the night of Ashura. Imam Hussein stands and he tells his companions, إِنِّي لَا أَرَى أَصْحَابًا خَيْرًا مِّنْ أَصْحَابِي. You're the best companions a man could have. You're the best comrades and friends that a man could have. A night like this, when Imam Hussein alayhi salam showed them their place in paradise, realizing that tomorrow none of them will stay alive, Imam Hussein showed them their place in paradise. A night like this, they spent the entire night in worship, in dua, in salat, in supplication. Historians say that if you were to enter the camp of Imam Hussein a night like this, you would hear, كان لهم دوي كدوي النحل. Have you heard the noise of bees? The noise of bees? That's the sound you would hear from the camp of Imam Hussein. Sounds of praying, of worshipping. ما بين قائم وقاعد وراكع وساجد. Performing prayers, worshipping, supplicating, reciting Salat al-Layl. Imam Hussein recited for one last time Salat al-Layl tonight. His last Salat al-Layl was performed tonight, the night of Ashura. Such a special night. Zainab alayhi salam knew that this was the only night she will remain with her brother. Thus, this night was a special night for Sayyidah Zainab. Realizing that tomorrow her brother will depart, her brothers will depart, her nephews will depart, her children will depart. This was the night of Ashura. For the past couple of nights, we've talked about several martyrs. From the companions and from Bani Hashim, from the relatives. There was one more there was one more martyr. There was one last martyr. But there was something special about this martyr, this shaheed. You know what's special about him? He was the youngest martyr in Karbala. The youngest martyr at the day of Ashura. This martyr was 6 months old. Ali al-Akbar, this infant. Imam Hussein alayhi salam was about to enter the battlefield. When he looks to his right, when he looks to his left, he sees nothing but dead bodies. لَمَّا رَأَ الصِّبْطُ أَصْحَابِ الْوَفَا قُتُلُوا نَادَى أَبِ الْفَضْلِ أَيْنَ الْفَارِسُ الْبَطَلُ وَأَيْنَ مِنْ دُونِيَ الْأَرْوَاحَ قَدْ بَذَلُوا بِالْأَمْسِ كَانُوا مَعِي وَالْيَوْمِ قَدْ رَحَلُوا وَخَلَّفُوا فِي سُوَيْدَ الْقَلْبِ نِيرَانَ نذر علي لئن عادوا وإن رجعوا لأزرعن طريق الطف ريحانا. Imam Hussein عليه السلام was about to enter the battlefield. He was about to say his last farewell. His sister Zainab عليه السلام, she comes and she says, "My dear brother, before you go, perhaps you may ask for some water for your infant, Ali, Abdullah." Some say Ali, some say Abdullah. "Perhaps you may ask the enemy for some water for Abdullah." Imam Hussein says, "Then give me my son. Give me my son." Zainab alayhi salam, she brings him the son, this 6-month-old infant. Imam Hussein carries him without carrying his sword. He went to the enemy without carrying his sword. Why? This is a gesture of saying, "Have mercy on me. I'm coming you not to fight. I'm not coming to fight. I'm coming to beg for some water for my child." He came and he stood in front of the enemies. He said that if I was sinful, if I had a sin, if you see me being sinful, what is the sin of this child? What is the sin of this baby? If you refuse to give me water, then at least have mercy on me, have mercy on this child. A child like this, perhaps being the same age as Ali al-Asghar. Imam Hussein was holding the child. He was holding the baby. The companion, the enemy soldiers were standing. Some say, "Let's kill the child." Others said, "No, perhaps let's give him some water. Let's have some mercy on him." Umar ibn Sa'd saw them huddling, thinking what they should do. Umar ibn Sa'd looks to Harmala. He says, "Ya Harmala, iqta' niza' al-qawm. There's no need for discussion. There's no need to have a discussion." Harmala says that on the day of Ashura, I threw 3 arrows. 3 arrows came from me. One of the arrows landed in the eye of Abul Fadl al-Abbas. The second arrow was a 3-headed arrow that landed in the chest of Imam Hussein. And a 3rd arrow, and this arrow broke my heart. It was the arrow that came and slew Ali al-Asghar. I killed the infant with the last arrow. Ali al-Asghar, as soon as he felt the pain of the arrow push against his neck, he opened his eyes and he smiled to his father, saying that, "My dear father, you brought me to get some water. You came to quench my thirst. Look at what they've done to me, my dear father." Imam Hussein looks to the sky and he says, "Hawwana alayya ma nazala bi annahu bi'ayn Allah. Allahumma la yakun hadha ahwan alayk min fasil naqati salih. تلقح سين دم طفل بيده اشحال اللي يجتل بحضنه وليده سال وترس شفه من وريده ذب للسما وللقاع ماخر Imam al-Baqir says that Imam Hussein put his hand under the neck of Ali al-Asghar. He collected the blood. When his hand was full of blood, he threw the blood to the sky. Imam al-Baqir swears that not a drop of this blood came back to the ground. Allah accepted this blood. Imam Hussein had to come back to the camp, not knowing what to say. He thought that they were about to quench his thirst. What is he going to tell his sister? What is he going to tell his daughter? What is he going to tell his mother, Ar-Rabab? His daughter Sukaina comes. Aba, hal saqayta akhi al-ma' wa hal baqiya min al-ma' shay? My dear father, did you give my son some, did you give our brother some water? And if you did, is there any water remaining? Imam Hussein takes out the child and he says, haki akhaki madbuha. Take your brother, they slaughtered your brother. بويا بويا الطفل الماء يخذت بويا الطفل للماء يخذت بسهم العدى مذبوح جبت شنو الذنب خويا العملت والماء حاضر ما شربت. And this is the most difficult part. So Kaina alayhi salam grabs the child and she brings it to her mother, Ar-Rabab, Ar-Rabab. Ar-Rabab takes this infant. She sees the arrow stuck in his neck. Ya ibni, ibni. Ya ibni, ibni, ya Abdullah, ya ghali. My infant? My child? I thought that they were about to quench your thirst. I had no idea that they were about to slaughter you and kill you. I wish that I had not come to Karbala. I wish I had not seen this day. I had plans for you to come old, to rise old, to become old. I never expected for you to be killed in Karbala. Yabni, yabni, ya Abdullah, ya ghali. Ana birbaak sahart al-layali. أنا هزن بالمهد والمهد خالي يا ناس حتى الطفل مذبوح ودمي على زند حسين مسفوح دمع على زند حسين مس. Went behind the tent, he grabbed his sword, he dug a small, very small hole, a very small grave for Ali al-Asghar, and he buried them, Finally, Imam Hussein wears his armor, he wears his turban, he puts on his sword, he comes to his camp, and he begins to shout, Ya Zainab wa ya Umm Kulthum, wa ya Sukaina wa ya Ruqayya wa ya Rabab, ويا ليلى عليكن من السلام فهذا آخر الاجتماع عليكن علب الافتراق. Imam Hussein says his last farewell. They come. They grab him. Please don't leave us. One of them grabs his shoulder. The other grabs his feet. The other grabs his hands. Please don't leave us. إلى أين يا حمانا؟ إلى أين يا رجانا؟ Imam Hussein says, من يقدم لي جوادي؟ Who brings me my horse? As Sayyida Zainab brings the horse to her brother. And she says, أي أخت تقدم لأخيها جواد المنية؟ Imam Hussein, these are the last moments. This is the night of Ashura. These are the last seconds. I don't think you will read, you will listen to these words and you will remain silent, my dear friends. My dear brothers and sisters, these are the last moments. Imam Hussein rides his horse. He's about to enter the horse. Imam Hussein is right about to enter. He hears a voice shouting from behind him. أخي أبا عبد الله قف لي هنيئة. Wait for me, my dear brother Abu Abdullah. Abu Ali, wait for me 1 second. He looks back and it's his sister Zainab. What do you want, my sister Zainab? She says, أخي أبا عبد الله انزل من على ظهر جوادك. He comes down from his horse. She says, come down from your horse. What do you need, my sister Zainab? She said, expose your chest. Expose your chest and expose your neck. As soon as he exposed his chest, as soon as he exposed his neck, she came close. She embraced him on his chest. She embraced him on his neck. Then she looks towards Medina and she says, Ummah Fatima, qad addaytu al-amana. My dear mother Fatima, I did exactly like you told me. I said, what are you talking about? She said, the day that my mother Fatima was about to die, she said that one day you will see your brother Hussein standing lonely, not a single supporter standing with him. On that day, embrace him on his chest, embrace him on his neck and tell him that your mother loves you. Khoya khoya ana ba'ani la bari lak ayalak ana bruhi la sajjat lak atfalak wal mawt la yirda bidalak ana ruhi kull ihna fidalak. These are the last seconds, the last seconds. Imam Hussein enters the battlefield. The women don't know what's happening. All they see is that Imam Hussein has disappeared. All of a sudden, the women sitting in their tent, sitting at their camp, they hear a horse coming. A horse is coming. They all think that Imam Hussein has come back to the camp. So Kana comes out. As Sayyida Zainab comes out from her tent, they see the horse of Imam Hussein coming back alone. His face is drenched in blood. His face is covered in blood. The horse has come back without the knight. They don't know what's happening. Sayyida Zainab comes out of her tent. She stands at the tail. She stands at the hill. Tell Zainabiyah, she stands and she sees Imam Hussein is lying on the battleground and Shimr ibn Dhul Jawshan is approaching him. Ayna al-munadi wa Husayna wa madluma wa imama. Shi'ati mahma sharibtum adba ma'in fadhkuruni. Shi'ati mahma sharibtum adba ma'in fadhkuruni. Say it with me. مهما شربتم عذب ماء فاذكروني شيعتي شيعتي مهما شربتم عذب ماء فاذكروني شيعتي. Say it loudly. شيعتي مهما شربتم عذب ماء فاذكروني. Stand. Shi'ati mahma sharibtum adba ma'in fadhkuruni. Shi'ati mahma sharibtum adba ma'in fadhkuruni. شيعتي مهما شربتم عذب ماء فاذكروني. أو سمعتم بقتيل أو شهيد فاندبوني. شيعتي أو سمعتم بقتيل أو شهيد فاندبوني. شيعتي فأنا السبط الذي من غير جرم قتلوني. شيعتي فأنا السبط الذي من غير جرم قتلوني. شيعتي مهما شربتم عذب ماء فاذكروني. شيعتي فأنا السبط الذي من غير جرم قتلوني. وبجرد الخيل بعد القتل عمدا سحقوني. شيعتي ليتكم في يوم عاشورا جميعا تنظروني. ليتكم في يوم عاشورا جميعا تنظروني. كيف أستسقي لطفلي فأبوا أن يرحموني. كيف أستسقي لطفلي فأبوا أن يرحموني. وسقوه سهم بغي عوض الماء المعين شيعتي
ما شربتم
شيعتي مهما شربتم عذب ماء فاذكروني. Continue.